This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind a Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? Isn't that fair? Throw it away. All right? All right!
They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord! It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
Talk to me.
Come on, talk.
I said talk to me, damn it! All right. I'm gonna make you talk. I said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch!
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 92, 1988's Child's Play.
Right, we're going back to the classics, man. This is 88's Child's Play. I mean, this is the one that started it all for our man Chucky, you know? This movie spawned five sequels. There were six Child's Play movies in total. Child's Play 1, Child's Play 2, Child's Play 3, Bride of Chucky, Seed of Chucky, Curse of Chucky.
And I can't say I remember a single one of them other than maybe Bride of Chucky.
Yeah, well, that one was good. I mean, that was sort of like taking the franchise in a new direction, a bit more comedic. You know, you had Jennifer Tilly in there as the female paramour to Chucky. I forget
great voice.
The name of the character. Tiffany. Mm. And yeah, I mean, that was fun. And then I think they went to the well too much with Seed and Curse. But I mean, this is Child's Play. This is from 1988, and this one was directed by Tom Holland. Now, Tom Holland, I mean, this guy, you know, he's not, people don't speak of him in the same breath as, let's say, your Cravens or your Carpenters, what have you, but I mean, the man has been involved in a lot of fantastic films. I mean, not only did he direct this one, but he's either written, directed, or both movies such as Fright Night, which is, you know, the original Fright Night, incredible, Monster Squad, Class of 1984, a few episodes back, The Beast Within, which is a really, really cool undersea movie. And, so Tom Holland is pretty fucking awesome. And this movie is pretty fucking awesome. I mean,
for sure.
You know, Chucky has become an iconic slasher. You know, I mean, he's part of the pop culture firmament, without a doubt. And so it's interesting going back and revisiting the first Child's Play, which I haven't really seen. Except for, I mean, I saw it in the theater when it first came out in 88. And it's interesting because I was not a horror fan at all. You know, I think I was maybe like 12 at that point. And I was terrified of horror. But there was something about Child's Play with the killer doll. And I don't know, there was something about it that was very intriguing. And it wasn't rated R. So I convinced my mother to take me and my sister to go see this movie. And I was scared throughout, you know, from the beginning to the end. But it wasn't like, I mean, the one thing about this movie, I mean, it's a very effective movie. Very little gore, you know? little bit of blood, not too much, but it was palatable. I was scared, but I was able to watch it. And in fact, I related to it quite a bit because, I mean, you have this character, Andy Barclay, right, who's our protagonist. Okay, fine, I was 12, he was about 8, but he's being raised by a single mother. And so there was that whole thing. Here I am watching this movie with my mother, who basically raised me from the, all by herself from the age of 2 on. And I saw some parallels there. And no, I didn't play with dolls. I didn't have a
top. G.I. Joe figures are not
dolls. Well, no, they're action figures.
No, exactly, on, exactly.
Right? But mind you, I did know. I will say I did have 2 dolls. 3 dolls. I had a Michael Jackson doll.
That's many different levels of creepy right there.
Well, you didn't have one?
Never land. No.
It was one holiday. Me and my sister both got Michael Jackson dolls. I was pissed out of my mind because
I don't want to know where that white glove had been.
No? Her doll was bedecked in the Thriller outfit.
Wow.
That's the one I wanted.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I got the Human Nature one. Well, he was dressed the way he was dressed on the cover of the Human Nature single.
Yes.
That's sort of like yellow furry vest and white shirt. So I was a little disappointed. I had a Mr. T doll. That was fucking badass.
That's awesome.
And I had a Wayne Gretzky doll.
Hmm. Yeah, wow.
The great number 99.
For sure.
Now, speaking of my sister, what she did with my Wayne Gretzky doll, she took that thing, stripped it naked, put it into a tuxedo and use it as basically a date for her Barbie dolls.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Now, if I would have kept that Wayne Gretzky doll in its original packaging, nowadays, what it would be worth?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, but instead it became like
just. I wonder if the great one got any action there with Barbie.
Hey,
you know, spawned a new character.
Yeah, Barbie was okay. But let's not go there. Okay, so I had a few dolls, but I didn't have a doll such as Chucky, which in a lot of ways it was reminiscent of a doll in the 80s. That I don't even remember the commercials for. My Buddy. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It was like this. They had My Buddy. They had Kid Sister.
My buddy. My buddy. My buddy. My buddy. Wherever I go, he goes. My buddy. My buddy. My buddy. My buddy. I'll teach him everything that I know.
My buddy. My buddy. Yeah. Wherever I go, he goes.
Yeah.
Kid Sister. They were very, very creative with the commercials. Yeah. Kid Sister. Kid Sister. So My Buddy was this doll that, would talk and interact with you and so on, and that was the conceit of Charles Play, of the good guy.
The good doll. Guys, which is a euphemism for, law enforcement and stuff, which is kind of a neat little thing. But, yeah, it falls into the category of these, every year there's some toy du jour that people will trample themselves over at Walmart to procure, whether it be your Tickle Me Elmos or what have you, and this one... The good guy's doll is a huge hit, and unfortunately for this poor single mom growing up in Chicago here, she cannot afford this doll, but her son really wants it.
He's obsessed with the good guy doll. He wants this good guy doll so badly. Now, the other thing that was kind of cool is that, in the 80s, toys were merchandised into everything, right? So it was such as it was with the good guy doll. You had a TV series, you had... pajamas that the kid was wearing.
Yeah.
You had accessory sets. You had cereal. You had merchandise to the hilt. And that's the way it was with everything. I mean,
whether it's the Sour Patch Kids or even up to the Transformers now, it's just the same.
They don't have the cereals and shit anymore. And they don't have the... I don't know if they have Saturday... Do they still have Saturday morning cartoons?
I wouldn't know. I don't know.
I don't know. But I mean, I remember getting up at 6 a.m. On a Saturday and until wrestling, around noon, I'd be watching Saturday morning cartoons. So, yeah, the good guy doll is everywhere. Andy Barclay wants a good guy doll. Was it his birthday or Christmas? It was his birthday. Mm. He wanted one so badly, but his mother, and again, I could relate, a single mother, limited means, and she couldn't afford it. But that's not how the movie begins. We got to talk about the beginning of the movie. It starts off with a pursuit where you have the Lakeshore Strangler. One, Charles Lee Ray, being pursued by a cop, and he's got a partner as well, but he's in a hot pursuit, and he's running, and he's played by the great Brad Dourif. Now, Brad Dourif is an incomparable genre actor.
He was the drunk local doc in one of my favorite shows of all time, Deadwood. He's mm-hmm. been in a whole bunch of shit.
I mean, the guy was in amazingly indelible character in The Exorcist 3. Really underrated movie.
Oh, and one also one of my favorites, because Gene Hackman is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. So he was in Mississippi Burning as well. So yeah, just an awesome,
he
awesome
He also played Grandma Wormtongue in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Mm. He was in One from the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, sure. The guy's got a huge resume.
Yeah.
Brad Dourif's incredible. And he's the guy that did the voice of Chucky for the entire series. So he's being chased. He's a Lakeshore Strangler. He finds refuge in a toy store. And he was shot, so he's about to expire. And before he's about to expire, he's like a sort of like a voodoo practitioner.
Yeah.
So he needs to find a vessel to put his soul into.
Yes, and this vessel would be, I guess, you know, in the throes of death. He's about to expire, and he's had a dozen or so dolls collapse on him in the middle of this Chicago toy store. Yep. And he opens the box.
Yep, and he grabs a good guy doll, and he goes... Something like, some sort of voodoo mumbo-jumbo, like says something about Damballa, give me the power, I beg of you.
Yes.
And that line has stayed with me from when I first saw this as a kid. Like I said before, I might have revisited once or twice since, but I haven't seen this in at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, give me the power, I beg of you. And the toy store explodes, and next thing we know...
The transference of souls this... Charles Lee Ray into this plastic doll that looks like Clay Aiken from American Idol.
Now, Charles Lee Ray, I mean, his name was like sort of like a portmanteau of three serial killers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Charles came from Charles Manson, obviously. Lee was from Henry Lee Lucas. Where did Ray come from?
The killer of Martin Luther King. I can't remember his name, but something to do with Ray.
James? No. James O'Ray?
James O'Ray, James O'Ray.
Okay, there you go.
So I guess not serial killers, but, I mean, people who killed really famous people.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, Andy's mom is working at a job. She works in a department store, and she works with somebody...
named Maggie.
Somebody named Maggie.
And yeah, again, we said she's of modest means, but she has to procure this toy, so she goes into this alley.
Yeah, because Maggie says, there's a peddler there on the alley, and he's selling those good guy dolls that Andy really wants.
As one would be wont to do, to go buy a toy off some vagrant in an alley. Like, the thing could be bedbug ridden, for all we know, right? Or not work, because one of the selling points of this toy was that it has a bunch of catchphrases, and which kids love, if you squeeze it and it speaks. So this doll,
you want to play?
Says, I'm your friend to the end. My name's Chucky, want to play? Or whatever it is, you know. And so putting aside any sort of propriety of going out into the back alley and getting some...
Well, Maggie's a little more streetwise, and you know, she says, how do we know it works? And the vagrant wanted $50 and she talked to 30.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she manages to procure this doll for her son, Andy. And she brings it home, and Andy is fucking ecstatic. He's over the moon. He's got a good guy doll. The cool thing about these good guy dolls is each one has their own individual name.
Yep.
This one's name was... Dun-dun-dun! Chucky.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play? Now, because she's a single mother of limited means... with a shithead boss. She had to work for some sort of like extra shift or whatever, and she needs someone to pick her son up at
from school
and babysit him, and that befell upon Maggie.
Mm-hmm.
So that night, I mean, so we have Andy, and he's bonding with the doll. I mean, I don't
know. And he's a cute little kid with a bowl cut, and he's got the Oshkosh like overalls, and it's just this, you know, super cute little kid. He just loves this doll, takes it everywhere he goes.
Alex Vincent was the actor that played him. And he's a good little child actor, I gotta say.
For sure.
Now, I don't even think we need to describe Chucky, because, I mean, he's so iconic. But, I mean, do you want to just, you know, just for those that have been living under a rock and just turn on our podcast today?
It's just that a shock of ginger mane.
Mm-hmm.
I liken him to... Again, Clay Aiken from American Idol.
But a much more rotund face.
Yeah, you know, cross with Conan O'Brien. I don't know. Just anyone who's ginger just looks like Conan O'Brien.
He's got the freckles. Well, when you were describing the Oshkosh Bagosh, you were describing Andy, right? Or were you describing Chucky?
Describing Andy and Chucky.
Yeah, they kind of dressed together, yeah.
For sure.
And the thing about him, with Chucky, that made him inherently creepy is his head was enormous.
Mm-hmm.
So when he was, like, you know, when they were sleeping together and he was... next to Andy in bed, and he just had this gigantic noggin.
Yeah, for sure. Him,
you know, just really, really creepy. Even before he, quote-unquote, turned evil, there's something not right about this doll. He didn't look all that cute and cuddly.
No, not at all. And unfortunately for Maggie, you know, she's tasked with putting Andy to bed, mm-hmm. and Andy would rather, obviously, not and play with his doll, but the doll is speaking through Andy,
right.
using him as a conduit and saying something, which I thought was really super creepy, that he wanted to stay up and watch the 9 o'clock news, which is really weird.
But there was a reason for that, because there was like, you know, and there something about his Charles Lee Ray's partner was...
Yeah, he's on the lam, but when you hear it from the mouth of a kid,
exactly.
whoa, you know?
It's like, Chucky wants to stay up and watch 9 o'clock news.
And also creepy is the apartment complex she lives in, which is a kind of...
gothic, yeah.
The gothic 1840s, you know, apartment complex that, you know, I've had the luxury of visiting Chicago on a number of occasions. It's a neat, iconic building. Mm-hmm. It was, I think, designed by some eccentric English architect, mm-hmm. and it sort of takes on a character of its own. It's almost like The Tenant, Polanski.
Which
it's a creepy building.
Which begs the question, no wonder you couldn't afford to buy the Good Guy doll. I mean, how could a single mother of limited means afford, you know, a penthouse?
Okay, well, fair enough. Now the area has been really gentrified,
yeah, exactly.
but at the time they needed some sort of, you know... down market building. It sort of reminded me of Basket Case. Mm. That building is probably completely gentrified, and the rents are probably like $3,500 a month.
Oh, that building didn't even exist, man. The Hotel Bronson didn't even exist in Basket Case.
Oh,
it was
fabricated
for the movie. Something else. I mean, the facade, and then it was all done in the interior. But anyway, we're not talking about Basket Case. We're talking about Charles Play. But anyhow, no, it was a damn cool, and that stayed with me as a 12-year-old, too. Just the look of that, the exterior of that building, it was very eerie. So, he puts Andy to bed, and, you know, all of a sudden she turns and she sees Chucky sitting there watching
the news. Yeah.
And of course, who's she going to blame?
Yeah.
Not the, you know, Andy.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is something we talked about in a previous podcast with Phantasm. I mean, obviously, Mike in Phantasm was older than Andy, but, you know, when you're a kid and you're not believed, no one believes you. So when there's, like, weird, scary, supernatural shit going around. It's like, well, Chucky turned on the TV. Chucky, put it. Chucky did it. I didn't do it. Andy, come on. But you know,
and she grabs a thing by the hand and like drags him into Andy's bedroom and tucks them in again,
mm-hmm.
Seemingly for the last time. Mm. But
well,
for her last time,
for her,
yeah.
Because next thing you know, she's being pushed out of the window of this this high rise.
Yeah, I guess Chucky is wielding a hammer, knocks her between the eyes, which is pretty. Again, this is a PG-13 movie.
Yeah.
Pummels her between the eyes, knocks her out the window, and she just falls to her death.
Mm-hmm. So when the mom comes home, you know, and she sees all these,
yellow police tape. Yeah. It's a crime scene.
Now, I mean, the cop that's on the case. This is the same cop that was pursuing Chucky at the beginning, and he's played by Chris Sarandon. And Chris Sarandon, for one thing, the man was married to Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, back in the day. Yeah,
back in the day. I mean, he's still smoking hot.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he was married to her when she was like,
yeah,
on fire. You know, I mean, he was in Fright Night. He was in another really cool undersea movie called The Sentinel. And then, for those that are more into their sort of 80s romantic, fantasy tales, he was in The Princess Bride.
Nice.
So he's a pretty good actor. And he's questioning, I mean, obviously, who are they going to suspect? They're suspecting Andy, right? But he's questioning the mother, and you could tell there's some sort of, I wouldn't say, would you say sparks between them?
Yeah,
or?
Probably. Mm. Until they find that there are little tiny, tiny footprints that are even smaller than Andy's, and they're on the kitchen counter.
Mm-hmm.
What would you ascribe that to? Is the killer some sort of midget? Again, you just sort of chalk this up to some sort of accident or what have you.
Yeah, exactly. So, Chucky, and we got to say, at this point, I mean, he's still talking in that sort of high pitch, you know, doll voice.
Friends to the end.
Friends to the end. he wants to find his partner because he wants vengeance, which leads to like another really cool scene. I mean, here you have this, which was alternately cool, but also
and very sad and scary.
Yeah, because you have this kid, this 8-year-old kid with this doll, running the L train in Chicago to the South Side, walking by himself, you know.
With no community organizer of President Obama to be found.
To get to this dilapidated shack where Chucky's partner Caputo
is hiding out.
Now, this is the only movie where Caputo is ever, like a childhood movie, where Caputo is ever mentioned or seen or whatever. And Chucky goes in there and turns on the gas. Caputo takes a shot, is fired. Boom. Explosion. Caputo is done.
It's Caput.
Caputo's Caput, yeah. And, you know, again, like, you know, we know what's going on. We, the audience, know what's going on. But Andy's mom will not believe her son that, like, all this weird stuff happening is not me, it's Chucky. Stop talking to your doll. It's not, he's just a doll.
Yeah.
Well, this leads us to one of the most iconic reveals in horror history.
For sure.
Where she picks up, first she picks up the box that he came in, and what falls out of the box? The batteries.
Mm-hmm.
So he realizes that Chucky, all this time, no, it can't be. Has he been operating without batteries? She picks up the inanimate object, opens up the compartment, realizes there's no batteries. Chucky turns his head around and says, "Hi, I'm Chucky, wanna play?"
Yeah, yeah.
And then she screams, and then he goes, then the voice comes out. He's like, "You stupid bitch, you filthy slut, I'll teach you to fuck with me."
Yeah.
Now we got the real Chucky. And they're fighting, and then he takes a chunk out of her, and he escapes, and...
Yeah, bites her in the forearm, and she's just frantic. So she runs, tracks down the Chris Sarandon, Chicago cop character, and tries to convince him. You know, and he's obviously incredulous, and so this woman has got to be a loon. I mean, what's this nonsense about a killer doll? She pulls up her sleeve, shows him the mark.
Yeah, but that's not enough to convince him.
No. Yeah.
What's going to convince him? So when he gets into his car, and there's Chucky in the back, reaches over to get to strangle him, and he puts a cord around his neck. Luckily, he managed, this is back in the day when cars had cigarette lighters, you know?
Yeah, those are the good old days.
He takes a cigarette lighter, he burns Chucky in the face, wicked scene, like, you know, the rubber of his face melting, and... Chucky's trying to stab the cop right through with his little knife, you know.
Yeah, and through the seat, through the back of the seat, through the bottom of the seat. That was really actually frightening, and it just goes to show how many shocks you can spur just by being a PG-13 movie. It's just because scares have to be relatable, and you know, if you're whether it's like an axe through the door in The Shining, if you're trying to protect yourself and stuff is still breaching your protective barrier, that is scary. And my God, like, can you imagine like a knife coming through the bottom of your seat when you're driving a car? Like, that is intense.
Especially being wielded by a couch fashion. Yeah. Like, it's come alive. But I mean, for sure, man. I mean, no, this, like, that's the whole thing. Like, I mean, this was a scary movie with, like, just the most minimal amount of gore, you know, and blood.
And just the odd blink by Chucky was creepy. There's 40 minutes where that doll does not say anything other than what, you know, he's supposed to say.
Stock phrases. Yeah. Attention is built expertly.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, Chucky wants to do a couple things. I mean, he wants to find a body.
Don't want to live your whole life as a... you know, a plastic 2-foot-tall doll. Like, right. You have to transfer your soul.
And he finds out that he's slowly becoming human.
Mm.
He actually visits the voodoo man who he was studying under as Charles E. Ray, and he's like, "I got shot, and it hurt, right? What the fuck's going on here?" And he's like, "Well, you're becoming human." And so he wants to find a soul now to put his body into, and who's that body going to be? Andy, right?
Of course. Yeah, why not? You get to live your whole life over again. You know?
That's not a good thing. I don't want to live my life again.
Well, yeah, I guess there's some of the bad stuff.
I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery.
Well, no, you don't want to, like...
I don't want to live my life again.
Okay, well, yeah, you don't want to be, like, made fun of in high school or, like, lose all your, you know, baby teeth. That's kind of unpleasant growing up, you know? But, you know, if you had the chance right now to, you know, live life again, maybe you would, you know? You know, buy yourself an extra... we won't say how old we are, like just a couple decades. Yeah, you would do it, you know?
Yeah, well, I don't know. That plead the fifth for now, but we'll, anyway.
Well, especially since presumably he would be like a precocious sort of genius type kid, right? Because he would still have the, what, Charles Lee Ray's mind in this tiny body.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So ultimately, I mean, okay, so the cop now, I mean, he now, incredulously enough, he believe, you know,
yeah,
he has proof, empirical mm-hmm. proof, this doll is alive and he's off to no good. And it comes down to this amazing set piece in the apartment where they're trying to, where Chucky is trying to put his soul into Andy's body again, give me the power, beg of you. They're trying to stop him. Chucky gets burnt to a crisp. Fucking incredible.
Yeah, yeah. He gets shoved into the fireplace, and mm-hmm. Andy procures some matches, gives them to his mom, lights him on fire, seemingly.
Mm-hmm. And he goes,
he's met his maker, but
Andy,
not.
We're friends to the end, and Andy gets a little one-liner. Mm-hmm. This is the end, friend.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you think he would meet his maker, but no. Mm-hmm. That burnt little piece of rubber just keeps going after him again, and, you know?
Yeah.
And he gets his head shot off. He gets
arm shot off. Yes,
again. Yeah. His arm,
it's only
leg.
A flesh wound. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And there was even, you talk about The Shining, there's even a little Shining homage where the mother is behind a door. You know, I think it was a bathroom. She tries to lock herself in and tries a little knife, trying
really
to
cool.
stick it in. So I mean, just crackling stuff, man. Excellent stuff. I wouldn't even talk about the cop's partner.
He's got some high handlebar mustache. Yeah, he's a complete maroon.
He reminded me a bit of like Nicolas Cage. He has this like vibe about him, you know?
Yeah,
it's like
Racing
Arizona Nicolas Cage kind of vibe, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
A little bit of Ben Stiller in Dodgeball.
Every time you see someone with a handlebar mustache, you always
well, he's ruined
he
handlebar mustache.
Said the same thing about Hulk Hogan in Santa Mustache. Anyway. No, I mean, this is a crackling movie. This is a great one. I saw in the theater, when I was young, it stayed with me. I saw two in the theater. I don't remember shit about it.
No, I don't either.
I'm going to probably revisit that one mm-hmm. very soon. But I mean, and then you know, I saw the you know, the Resurgence of Chucky, all the sequels, The Bride and The Seed and The Curse of. But yeah, this is a good one. What did you learn from Child's Play?
Well, when you know, poor young Andy is, you know, being taken to see a psychiatrist in this, you know, a mental hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously they think he's got an imaginary friend or he's starting to lose his mind. The hospital is called Bellevue, which seems to be the name of every mental hospital in every movie.
So true.
And it was an infamous hospital mm-hmm. in New York City. And I think, obviously, not anymore, but it was known for treating the mentally ill in a sort of abysmal fashion in the 19th century. But Bellevue, every hospital worth its salt is named Bellevue. That's what I learned. What did you learn?
Well, okay, well, I mean, again, and, you know, we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, but again, they just don't make him like they used to. I mean, this film was made for $9 million. It was a low-budget movie. It was very profitable. I mean, Chucky was puppet, you know, but utterly convincing. You
for
know,
sure.
There was not one scene where you thought to yourself, nah, I'm not buying it, you know?
And it's a great conceit to have a kid who's not believed hauled into a police station and sort of cross-examined
mm-hmm.
in a very scary way by these Chicago cops, but he's telling the truth in all instances, and he's just not believed, and that's an amazing conceit. Mm-hmm. It also goes to show that you don't need gore to have frights. We just podcasted The Prowler, which has gore in
great
spades,
gore.
But this is way more scary than
Without
The Prowler.
Doubt, yeah.
The Changeling is more scary than a lot of super gory movies.
Mm-hmm. Which is not to say that we don't like gore. I mean, we love our Fulci, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the thing about Fulci is that the gore was just like the cherry on top of the sundae, you know?
For
I mean,
sure.
With the atmosphere and the music and all that, you know? So, but
in the hands of someone capable, you don't need gore to have fright.
No.
And that's
like,
what this showed in
this
spades.
One, yeah, PG-13 movie, minimal gore, scary as hell all can be. And
for
I mean,
sure.
It was scary when I was 12, and you know what? It was still scary now. So
yeah, I agree.
Like, and again, like, you know, it was done so ingeniously, so effectively with the tension. I shudder to think what would happen if they decided to remake Child's Play.
Which they are. Yeah, they're doing a reboot.
Are they really?
Yes.
So it's going to be some fucking CG monster, yeah. As always.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And we've got to say, the animatronic effects, amazing. Mm. Really well done. Lots of, presumably where this $9 million went to. And it's also neat seeing stuff on location in a neat city in the winter in the beautiful Chicago, South Side, using the Brewster Apartments, the infamous Brewster Apartments, snow on the ground, great setting.
No, I was going to say, I mean, for a low-budget movie, you would think that, instead of shooting Chicago, let's shoot in Toronto.
Go to Buffalo or something,
Yeah, like in our fair city, which you do so much. But, I mean, the reality is, by it being set in Chicago, by going to the South Side of Chicago, by riding that L train, it lends so much to the atmosphere of this movie. So, yeah, there's...
And in addition, you can relate to being a kid and being lost, and you have, even though he was being guided by Chucky, but he's wandering around underneath the L train line, and there's a bunch of bums, like, warming their hands, making little fires, and there's this sort of camp with vagrants, and it's a scary scene. Yep. And the scene where Chucky is watching the 9 o'clock news, that is amazing. And the blinks, it's just a really awesome film. Star rating.
Yeah, it's a 4-star movie for me.
Me too. I was really surprised when because I suggested we revisit this because I hadn't seen it in years. And it was a very, very foggy memory to me. And at the time, I don't know if I appreciated it as much as I do now. Mm-hmm. But I really, really do. 4-star for me,
it's
all the way.
Because, because of Bride of Chucky, which was a good movie, but it took him in a totally different direction. I mean, it's sort of like Freddy Krueger. I mean, he went from being scary
to being loquacious and just talkative. If you're trying to sell something horrific, there should be less talking and just more atmosphere.
Yeah.
And when he started spouting these zingers, it just sort of, the horror was lost on me.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is scary Chucky. This was awesome. So, yeah, 4-star movie. We both loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And for more, I recommend checking out our
4-star website. Reviews, top 10 lists, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Mm-hmm. www.reallyawfulmovies.com. And our Twitter handle as well is awful_movies. Follow us. Let us know what your favorite horror films are from the 80s or any other era. And we'll discuss them. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.